Sarah Bellows. Tell me a story.
All right, what an opening. Welcome to The Drive-In, guys. I'm your host, Aaron Lopez, and really excited this week because normally we have people who have been on four, five, six times. This time, though, we have a newbie, first-timer, Devin Norsworthy.
Hello.
The name might sound familiar because her husband, Ben, has been on quite often for scary movies and for, you know, you just kind of name it. He's been on quite a few times. And also, we used to have a wrestling podcast together. So me and Ben have worked together quite often. But Devin's never been on the show. So I'm really happy to finally get you on.
Thank you.
So when I set out the kind of the all call of, like, here's all the shows that I need people to come on and record for, Devin popped in really, really quickly. Like, you were in really quick for this one. So scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is this week's episode. Why were you so excited? Like, what made you jump to this one?
This was my childhood. I love these books, and I've read this series over and over and over. So when I found out that they were making a movie of this, I was like, oh my gosh. And then you needed somebody to do the podcast, and I was like, that's me.
Yeah.
It's gotta be me.
No, I was excited because, I mean, Devin's also a teacher, so we've definitely got that in common. And one of the things I was really excited for is to get your perspective of how they portray the books once you had kind of told me that you were really into them. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into that. But Ben's always on for scary movies, and I know you like scary movies too. We know his side of the story. Why do you like scary movies so much? What draws you to them?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure. I guess the right answer would be I like to be scared. That's like exhilarating.
Yeah.
But at this point, I've seen so many scary movies and so many different types of scary movies. The English teacher nerd in me is like, I like to compare each scary movie to the standard of that subgenre, you know?
Like the conventions that become part of it. I love that because one of my favorites is actually Cabin in the Woods, because it uses all of these conventions and sometimes plays on them and sometimes just turns them on its head. So
that's a good one.
Yeah, I love it. So
that one was a good one because it was so surprising, because it starts out like, this is just going to be what I've seen a million times, and then it twists. Yeah.
Well, it's early Chris Hemsworth. The motorcycle into the barrier, whatever they ended up with that.
Mm-hmm.
What a great one. If you guys haven't seen Cabin in the Woods, go see it. It's a good one. Mm-hmm. Okay, so clearly you remember the books. Do you have any favorite stories from them?
I actually really liked, I like the haunted house.
Okay.
And that was represented in the movie. That illustration is one of my favorites for sure. That's what at least half of it is for me, are the illustrations.
Yes, I would completely agree that the scary Stories to Tell in the Dark franchise, the books, only goes so far. The illustrations take them beyond. Like, these are for kids.
Right.
Like, these are for kids. I remember reading them when I was, I think, in, late elementary, fourth or fifth grade for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was terrified by I think it was the, I'm trying to remember the one that always jumped out. I think it might have been The Big Toe. That's the one that has the girl with like the hollowed out eyes, and her mouth is like and like a spider in the cheek.
Oh, the hollowed out eyes girl is the haunted house.
Okay. So maybe that is that one then.
The hollowed out cheek is the red spot.
Okay. Okay.
In The Big Toe, you see a toe.
And it's just sticking out of
and a kid with like a hoe.
Yeah.
Like leaving. But the kid, even though it's just a kid,
he's creepy.
The kid is creepy. He's got a big forehead.
Yeah.
He's just creepy.
Yeah. No, I forgot about the kid. Yeah. Well, okay. Don't want to jump too far into it. But so the haunted house was one that you really enjoyed. Any others that jump out to mind?
One that it wasn't represented in this movie, the Wendigo.
Oh, yeah.
There was something about that was so haunting, because when the guy is getting drug away, mm-hmm. he's saying, oh, my fiery feet, it burns, you know, or something yeah. like that. And then, you know, when the other man comes back later, the guy's just ashes. He mm-hmm. just, you take his hat off and he falls to ash. There's just something very, it's stuck in my head. You know, some things, some images just stick with you.
Well, and that one too, that was in the movie, but not in the movie. Like, they reference it in the, there's like.
You see it in the book.
Yeah, like there's the a couple title. That they talk about, but they don't actually go into the storyline. So, no, I my favorite two, the one that kind of creeped me out the most, and I thought one that is kind of a funny honorable mention, the girl who stood on a grave, with like where she goes out and she scares herself to death because the knife pins her dress. She thinks she's getting caught. That one I absolutely love. And then the viper, I always thought was so fun, where it's this old guy who comes up, he's calling, he's like, I'm coming up, I'm the viper and I'm gonna come up. And she gets scared, she's like, call the cops. He shows up and it's this little squatty guy who's a window wiper with an accent. And I think that's kind of what's cool about the book series, too, is you have some fun ones. Like, yeah. you have some kind of just, like, cheeky fun stories combined, like, sharing the back page of something just horrifying.
The way the books were divided up, they'd have, like, a chapter of funny ones.
Mm-hmm.
What was the one about the bones? The something Kelly's?
Yeah, well, because, okay. What was that? That was one, too, because I've been looking at some things to kind of prepare for this, and everybody keeps saying the Jangly Man was based off that illustration. Because if you look at the Jangly Man within the movie, that, the, what's the name of that actual, it's
Are
not.
Are you talking about Me Tai?
Yeah, it's Me Tai Dodie Walker. Because that's the name of the story. That's just a head. It's like an old man's head.
It's just a head, yeah.
So they were saying, well, so where'd they get the illustration from that? And I think it's the man who's like kind of skinned alive and he's like dancing.
Yeah.
And he's singing a song. They think that's maybe where they got a little bit of it
from. While I was watching, I got the two mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
And then later I was like, oh, those are two different stories. Because yeah. when it first started happening, I was like, well, this one's supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
But it was not funny.
No, and that was creepy.
In the movie, that was more terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Than the illustration by far. That 100%. Was a really good monster. Yeah. The movie.
Yeah.
Version.
Yeah. So we'll get into it. We'll rank our monsters here by the end, but okay. Yeah, I'm really excited. So let's look at the trailer rundown and then we'll get into the story. So this, we'll see how close we got. We're back to seven. A couple weeks ago we only had five. It was fantastic. So we had,
you're talking about trailers?
Trailers.
I was like, this is enough trailers.
I think the Ohio standard is seven, because I found that in some states I'll go and I'll see it and it's like three or four. Or you know, Andre, who was down in Texas, will say, yeah, I had five of them. I'm like, I had eight this week.
That's ridiculous.
So I don't know why they show so many. But it was Don't Let Go, which I really want to talk about. If you saw that one, it looked phenomenal. It Chapter 2, Maleficent Mistress of Evil, Ready or Not, Zombieland 2, Midway, and Knives Out were the seven that I saw. Did you see Don't Let Go about the...
Will you remind me?
So it's about an uncle whose niece dies, and then he gets a phone call from his niece 2 weeks before she dies. So he is... you would have probably remembered it, because it jumped out to me and Jordan, and we're like, oh, this looks really good.
It sounds good, just based on that line.
So essentially, it's an uncle who's a cop. And the trailer starts out with him talking to his niece, and he's like, yeah, the one good thing about your dad being kind of a bum is you get to see me all the time. And it's his brother, and he's just kind of giving him crap. And then the next time she calls him, and she's screaming and out of breath, and someone gets into their house and kills her father, and her mother. And so then he is trying to deal with it. They bury him, and then he's sitting in his office one day, and his phone starts buzzing, and it's her. And he picks it up and he's like, who is this? And she's like, what do you mean, who is this? It's me. And he's like, where are you at? And she's like, I'm in my room. He goes up to her room and like, he's there in the room. She's saying she's in the room. And you find out that there was some sort of a something happened. And when she called him that day, it went to him 2 weeks later. And so like, they're trying to work together to find out who killed her and it's kind of like a mystery, and it just, oh.
That reminds me of that movie, Frequency, a little bit.
It's like Frequency, but like on a shorter timeline. Mm-hmm. But it just, it was really cool. I'm excited for it.
That sounds interesting, and I thought I was there for all of them, but I don't remember that.
Well, and it might not have shown up in your guys' theater, but of the other ones, what are you looking forward to seeing? What jumped out to you?
Zombieland 2. I loved Zombieland.
So how many years has it been? I know it's been at least 10, but I think it might have been more.
Timelines like that.
Well, the last time Emma Stone was a new actress, you had Jesse Eisenberg was fairly new. I think he'd been in Social Network and that was really it. Mm-hmm. And Woody Harrelson was kind of, hadn't had the resurgence quite yet. He wasn't obsolete by any stretch. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of after that he started picking up some funnier, newer, different roles.
Yeah.
But it's been a while.
I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to... Was the one about knives, was it just called Knives?
Knives Out.
Knives Out. It kind of had a clue, kind of, and boy, is it loaded with stars.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. My mom is really into mysteries, and we went to see the Murder on the Orient Express. Okay. She digs all that stuff, and it kind of has that sort of feel to me, maybe a little funnier.
Yeah, Chris Evans, he's going to be I would assume, well, a few of them seem to be kind of a comedic relief, but mm-hmm. he seemed in the trailer to be bringing a lot of comedy. So, I think, of the ones, yes, definitely. Ready or not, I've seen so much, I think the trailer gives too much away, where they're playing hide and seek, and you're like, essentially, you just need to know how it ends, because the rest of the movies seems to be in the trailer.
I felt very meh about that.
But Midway, I'm excited for. I used to watch a lot of... war movies growing up, and my grandpa loved them, my dad loved them, and we kind of got oversaturated. The market in like the early 2000s was just like there were war movies coming out 3, 4, 5 times a year, but it's been a while since we've had one. I think Dunkirk was the last one, and before that it was a couple years, so
yeah.
Pretty excited for that, but that's not scary movie, so we're gonna skip that one. And I think Ben's coming on for It in a few weeks, so
I'm of course looking forward to that.
It'll be good. All right, well, let's get to it. This is the new format. Again, if you guys haven't been listening, the last couple is we don't spend the entire time on every specific little element of the movie, but we talk about the overall structure. So from now on, there you don't really have a spoiler-free summary because everything in here we're going to be looking at but could potentially have spoilers. So so I'll just kind of start out, and Devin, and just say, what did you think?
I wasn't disappointed. Going into it, it was really important to me that it visually delivered because the books visually delivered. So, and then when I saw that Guillermo del Toro was a part of the, I love his monsters. My favorite monsters come from him. So I was like, okay, good. Good, good, good. Because I expect good monsters. And so I wasn't disappointed in that way. The undercurrent of the Nixon election and the Vietnam stuff. Yeah. I have an idea of what they were trying to say with it. I just don't know if I wanted it.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, is that do you think the time period was necessary, that the 1968 time period, I mean, the only thing that I garnered from that being there, as far as the plot that we would take from the storyline, was kind of that drive-ins were a little bit more prevalent, and otherwise, I don't know how much of it was necessary. Now, I don't think it detracted.
No.
But, like you said, we had a lot of side plots that like we're kind of political commentary or social commentary, but
I don't feel like it followed through enough and brought it home enough to be there at all. And I was thinking the whole time, your Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, your fan base are 80s, 90s kids. So what if you would have said it in like the early 90s? Then the fan base would really be like, yes, I'm so connected to all this.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it didn't bother me that it was set in the 60s. It definitely didn't
bother me. I wasn't upset. I just was kind of curious.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So Now, you will know this better than I. I've read the stories. I feel like I'm pretty confident. But Sarah Bellows seems like a new character to me. Is she in one?
No, I couldn't find her
either. Okay, because I was like, this seems like an obscure reference. It might be a deep cut. But so did you like the structure of how the plot built off of that? I felt like it could have gone one of two ways. It could have done what it did mm-hmm. and delivered the way it did. Or gone through more of kind of a trick-or-treat anthology style. It's an anthology of stories. So mm-hmm. I thought it could have gone either way. What were your thoughts on that?
It was okay. I mean, it was pretty predictable. It wasn't anything new. I mean, it was very Goosebumps, mm-hmm. you know. But I didn't hate it. I would have even liked more stories to have come up. I was there for I'm a fan of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I want to see the stories and the monsters and all that. Anything else extra along the way is like, I don't need that.
No, that's funny because like half the things you've said are things I have down. I wanted more of the stories. I felt like, again, like you said, I wasn't disappointed by what we had, but I could have gone for 3, 4, 5 more elements drawn in.
Yeah.
We had the police officer that kind of was tied in to the Jangly Man storyline, which, you know, maybe they could have given him his own, or the dad maybe could have gotten one. There's all these different mm-hmm. characters who I felt could have gotten pieces of the storyline together, or we touched upon them as they were doing their research. Some of the ones, like the Wendigo and all these other ones that are in the book, but they're just kind of an Easter egg more than an actual story.
Right, because you had the little music box mm-hmm. that played the Hearst song. Mm-hmm. And that's that's in the first book. Yep. So if there was more things like that, because at first I was really excited and thought that's the direction they were going. Mm-hmm. Because another story that you just see in the book is The Strangers.
Yes.
And The Strangers is all about the man who says ghosts are hogwash mm-hmm. when the lady on the train is like, do you believe in ghosts? No, I absolutely do not. And I was thinking, oh, that's connected to this cop.
Yeah.
You know, just little things like that. But then it didn't do that anymore. It just stopped doing that.
I felt like there is one. And I feel like I should know these, but there's one about a dog, like a hellhound. Isn't there one? I feel like it might be the second. But there's one about a dog, and I felt like they were trying to, with the black lab, to kind of give an homage there, but that felt like a reach.
Well, in Me Tied Doty Walker, there's a dog that sings back to him.
Okay.
So maybe I thought, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, maybe not.
Even though this dog didn't sing back, the dog was just like staring like, and now get me out of here.
Yeah. Well, as soon as we heard the dog, Jordan has a rule pretty much that she won't go to a movie in which she thinks a dog's gonna die. So like right. the dog's journey home and the Art of Racing in the Rain, all these types.
Yeah, don't take her to see that.
We're never gonna see these movies. So as soon as the dog started barking, she's like, I'm gonna have to walk out.
All right.
She's like, nope, I'm gonna. And I felt like, didn't the dog like jump through the window? The dog ran away.
He ran away. I feel like that's all.
So I'm like, okay, don't worry about it, but. It was just kind of one of those funny moments where she definitely...
She's half off her seat like,
She looked at me. She turned and looked. She's like, give me the dog. Eyes.
So I hear a monster. I see glad. A dog.
And it was close to the end of the movie. So I'm like, well, maybe I can convince her.
The dog was spared.
But yeah, I think that the structure for me... So going back to Sarah Bellows, the structure for me was probably... I don't want to say it was a cop-out. Because I liked it. I thought it was I was comfortable with it.
It worked.
But I feel like they could have done more. I think it was better than Goosebumps. I thought Goosebumps.
Oh, sure.
I liked elements. I liked how they incorporated some things. But overall, I thought it was a wash. And how it got a sequel, I'll never know. But the part of Goosebumps that I liked is they really did give an homage to the fans who read them all.
Yeah.
Whereas I think you didn't necessarily have to have even known that this was a book Mm-mm. to go in, and you didn't miss much if you hadn't read them.
Nope.
And so I think that's why I was disappointed with that structure, is because Sarah Bellows, her character even kind of, to me, fell a little flat by the end. I liked her storyline, but not because of her. I liked her storyline as it connected to Stella. So I don't know. But that reminds me of another question I was going to ask, is what do you think about the Stella storyline with her mother and father, and how that went? Because I don't know. I want your thoughts.
I feel like that was kind of hollow, too. Even, like, Stella's friendship group was kind of hollow and underdeveloped.
She did have she had the strongest connection that she had in this was to Ramon, who she met hours,
you know, right.
She met during the course of this movie, and it had only been maybe a day or so by the end.
Right.
And so, yeah, I was thrown off by the fact that Augie and who was the other one?
Chuck.
That these two, while she was worried about them and was concerned, she had a closer connection to random, no, never have seen this guy before.
Just rolled character into town.
So that, yeah, I felt like her storyline. I'm glad you brought up the friends, but
there was a funny line though that Chuck said to Augie, and they said that Augie likes all girls. He said he's so much dreamier than you.
Yeah. There was a couple of them too, but yeah, I mean, Augie reminded me of the actor who plays he's in, I can't think of the name of the show now, it's on Showtime, William H. Macy's in it.
I'm not gonna be any help.
I'll find it Showtime. Here but it's he's also, do you watch Gotham?
No.
He plays the Joker character.
He reminded me of one of the Try Guys.
Oh, okay.
Do you know those guys? The tall one that's kind of gangly.
Oh, no. Cameron Monaghan. Which,
the actor.
It's not him, but it looked, I mean, if I show it to you, this is the guy.
Okay.
That, I mean, I saw him and somewhere. I'm like, oh, he's in this? No, it's not him. But yeah, he that's who it reminded me of. But no, I thought that the character of Stella's story with her mother and father, I didn't understand why it was in there.
Right.
Other than just showing that her dad has gone through a lot as well as her, and there were
I think it strengthened the theme of coming of age. There was just a strong coming of age. This is our last Halloween together, mm-hmm. you know, all that angst of coming of age. It just added to that.
Yeah, I just wish that we had. I wish that the storylines became more involved, from the book became more involved than these loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
We spent a lot of time with her, with Stella, and I liked Stella's storyline. I was a bit confused that the dad storyline was never really wrapped up. I was confused. It felt like they were trying to stay on the edge of, hey, we have to be PG-13, so her and Ramon can't have an actual, like, sexual relationship. Like, they looked like they were going to kiss about 12 times, mm-hmm. and they never did.
It was insinuated from the very start, from the moment she sat in that car. Yeah.
And, like, at the very end, when they survive, like, they're looking into each other's eyes, and then they hug again. And I'm like, that's, if there's ever a kiss moment in this type of movie, that's the moment.
He's going to Nam.
Exactly.
Give him some sugar.
And even when he got on the bus, they didn't do it. It was so it was very much like, are we playing with the sexual tension? I mean, I know they're both young, but like they're like juniors, seniors.
Right. You
know, like, he's at least 18, so, and she's not that much younger. So I don't know. I felt like that there were a lot of times where like the movie couldn't just lean into what it was at times. It was trying to stay on the edge, the fringe of something. And I don't know what.
I liked that, and they could have done even more with this, the idea that Stella was a writer and Sarah was a writer.
Yep.
And the stories were scary. Mm-hmm. They both wrote scary stories. But that never even had any connection. Ben even said, he was like, I thought for sure that she was going to publish these stories and write stories that, I mean Stella, was going to publish these stories, and it would have more of a connection, like that parallelism would connect at the end, you know, the way they were both writers.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the end, what do you make of the end with Stella going off with her father and with
Ruth?
Sequel?
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to find Augie and Chuck and maybe Tommy. They might not want to find Tommy. I don't know if they want Tommy. Leave Tommy there.
Yeah, just a very ambiguous ending. And this, I'm glad. Maybe now we will get more of these stories. Maybe that's their plan all along.
Yeah, we can't cover them all in this one if we're going to have a series of movies.
Yes, and to say, I always look, whenever I look at if a movie is going to get a sequel, I look at the box office and I look at the budget. Budget was a max, they always give a range, but a budget was a max of about $28 million for this, and they've made $54 million, which I feel like this was rushed. If it would have come out around October, you double, and I don't know why it didn't, because it really would have made a lot more money with a October versus an August release date.
Me and Ben were saying that as we were walking out. Why did this not come out in October? It started even on Trick or Treat night. Mm-hmm. You know why?
Well, and I'm trying to look and see if maybe Lionsgate has a movie coming out in October that they didn't want to compete with itself.
Oh.
But I'm not seeing anything right off the bat, so it's surprising.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's doubled its budget, I think. I mean, it didn't go crazy. It didn't make $100 million or anything, but it made money. So hopefully we get a sequel.
Yeah, because at the end I thought, we'll get Chuck and Augie back.
Something.
We did not get Chuck and Augie back. So, yeah, I'd be very disappointed if there wasn't another one.
Oh, and there was a line with Ruth that Chuck made. And he's like, my sister's gone.
I know. That confused me.
And
is she dead?
Very clearly she was saved.
Yeah.
She, like, they didn't carry her out in a body bag.
She was just on a stretcher.
So that was one line that confused me. I feel like that might have been a missed edit, that maybe they did kill her in one of the... And I don't know, because and unless he meant, like, she's already been attacked, so she's off the list, but still, I don't know.
Caught that, too, okay, and I'm glad. Said that to Ben, and Ben said what you just said. Oh, they just mean that her story's over, and I was like... That's not how you immediately take it.
He said
she's
gone. Yeah. Like, my sister's already been attacked. Like, that. I was a little confused.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if that was an edit or just a poor phrasing. What did you think of the misdirection with the red spot and the red room? Both of those with Chuck, because the first time we hear red spot, he spilled ketchup.
Oh, yeah.
And then the red room, it's... All the rooms become red versus the actual, I don't remember what it stood for, but like the records and emergency something.
Right, that it spelled, it was like an acronym.
Yeah, so what did you think of that? Because I thought, they're both clever.
Well, once I finally saw what, I picked up early that his story was going to be the dream.
Mm-hmm.
In the dream, the story, the room is not red.
Okay.
So that's a new element. In the dream, in the stories, it just looks like there's carpet that looks like there's a lot of trap doors.
Yeah.
And the windows have nails in them. There's no mention of it being red. So that was... When I was watching that, I was wondering why... Even though I thought it was cool how the room turned red with the lights, the emergency lights, mm-hmm. That wasn't in the story.
Was yeah,
the addition.
And I think they did that. I mean, there were a few times where they took a little creative liberty.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire way in which they portrayed it mm-hmm. was a bit of a creative liberty. But so, yeah, I liked... Get on my soapbox for a moment. I was upset that they gave away so many of the actual stories and monsters in the trailer. Mm. The fact that, I mean... I was just waiting for how are they going to have Ruth have her pimple, you know, or like mm-hmm. her boil. We knew it was going to come up because it was pretty much the marketing image for quite that. And mm-hmm. the pale lady standing behind him in the red room or the hallway. Mm-hmm. Those two things were shown in every trailer.
Yeah.
So I kind of wish that we were a little bit more surprised with some of them.
Yeah.
We saw Harold already.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only thing,
It made me excited, though. When I saw those trailers, I was like, oh, that's... Yeah. Oh, that's...
Oh, and Harold was done... I mean, that was...
very well.
Oh, my God. That was almost identical to
almost identical. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was fantastic.
And in the movie, they cut out his middle.
Yeah.
You could just see the post, and I liked that. Mm-hmm. That was about the only difference. The way he was on the pole and everything was just the legs. Spot on.
Yeah.
I appreciated that.
Well, while we're talking about the monsters, let's do a ranking. First, let me make sure I have them all. I've got the big toe, which is not necessarily the big toe, but it was portrayed in the movie as the big toe.
You know, the corpse in that one in the movie looked a lot like the haunted house.
See, and I think corpse. That's... Okay, so that's where I thought that was... I'm okay, so I'm looking at it. I'm pretty sure that was the haunted house image.
But that's what it looked like.
Yeah, I think that was what they used for that. But we have
that was
we
a
have
good one.
Big Toe, we have Sarah Bellows, which I guess kind of monster-y, but yeah. Harold, Pale Lady, could say the spiders, maybe, but am I missing? Oh, the Jangly Man, of course. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think if I'm missing any others.
That's it.
Okay, so let's just do those five. What would you say was your least favorite portrayal? Big Toe, Sarah Bellows, Harold, Pale Lady, or Jangly Man?
I thought that the spiders in the movie, that story happened a lot creepier than it did in my head when I was reading the story. So I like the way that was done. I like when the leg came out and then she touched and it started to move, I had to look away.
Well, and when she started to pull it out, oh my God, the pulling out.
Brutal.
Yeah. And they did a good job to hide it without hiding it, but like her cheek bursts open. I mean, like you kind of see like the gruesome kind of, like flesh wound of it, but it's the spiders are covering it, so you can't really see it. But I thought the actress who did that her and Chuck both did a phenomenal job of that that reunion when he's trying to like save her and she's just beside
freaking
herself.
Out, yeah, as I would be. You know, I'm looking at these and I like them all for different reasons. I thought Harold. I was like, oh, that looks just like Harold. In the book, that's such a creepy story. It looks just like him. I love that monster. And then the big toe monster is the one that's my favorite in the first place. Yeah. So I loved it. The Pale Lady was dead on the Pale Lady.
Oh, I mean, you look them side by side and it's uncanny.
Yeah. But that one has always been like, meh.
Yeah.
To me anyway. It's kind of, I don't know. Well, I can see where it might be scary to some people, but I always thought that one was more of the, I'm not really freaked out by that.
Well, and I think it was...
It's like a puppet or something.
Yeah, it was oddly comforting. Like, she looked like she wanted to hug.
She was hugging him, yeah.
And then all of a sudden...
And then absorbed him.
He was absorbed, and so it was, yeah. So it was more uncomfortable than scary.
Yeah, I was sitting there thinking, because in the story that doesn't happen. This is one of the liberties. I was like... What's she gonna do?
Yeah.
What is about to happen to him? And then she just absorbed him, and I was like, that's really weird.
Yeah. That was, okay, so I'd probably say storyline-wise, hers was my least favorite.
But the idea, though, of going down a hallway and seeing something coming at you, running the other way, and it's coming at you, and running that way,
every time it's stepping, closer. It's getting closer in all directions.
That's terrifying.
That is. Yeah, that's true. And again, as far as how it looks in the movie versus the illustration, it is absolutely dead on.
Yeah. Harold and the Pale Lady were the closest in interpretation.
Well, and overall, not because, I mean, the Big Toe Lady looked, she looked exactly like the Haunted House, but those are going off in two different directions. Yeah. Kind of lose a little bit there.
Different stories.
But I'd say my favorite overall was probably Harold because of the... this really set the tone for some of the other gruesome aspects that you would see when Tommy starts like clawing at himself at all of his orifices, pulling straw out and like vomiting straw. And you're just like,
that was so freaky.
Cause I thought he just was going to get stabbed and die. But then all of a sudden you start to see he's becoming and you're like, oh my gosh.
That was a great twist. In the story, the man is just skinned. That's horrifying. You know,
he's just skinned.
He was just skinned, and this guy. But when he was turning into Scarecrow, I was like, "Oh my gosh, that is a really horrific twist."
Mm-hmm.
My favorite, though, as far as scary, was the Mitai Doughty Walker. Because when he puts himself together and he starts to try to walk, he's not quite together right.
Mm-hmm.
And that spider-like backwards crawling movement has always been very freaky to me.
Like the Exorcist walking down the stairs backwards.
Yeah.
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 There is an actor who actually portrayed the jangly man who is like triple jointed, who was doing a lot of that.
You're kidding.
No, it's actor Troy James. And yeah, how they created the jangly man. It's essentially he did a lot of these things in like a green suit. And so then
wow.
So that's why it looked so gruesome, as it yeah. was an actual person doing it.
Yeah, that was hard to watch. And there, somebody had brought a child. I bet she was 6 or 7 sitting next to us. And she was tripping.
Oh,
you should not have brought her. These monsters are too good for a 7-year-old.
Yeah, looking to see, because I wanted to share this. So, in the let's see here. The contortionist, he's a contortionist, Troy James, who's made a living in Hollywood off of his unique ability to make his body do things that most bodies won't. So, he says, the flexibility is something I was born with innately. Since I was a little kid, it was something I was able to do. He's always done a lot of Hollywood haunts to do some of those creepy things. But yeah, it's really cool if you see him. There's an image of him with his like arm behind him, and you're like, oh yeah, that looks familiar.
Yeah, that movement. Oh, it just, that's a personal thing. That's something that bothers me. That spider like weird like cracking as you go kind of movement.
Well, and how they incorporated his, I felt like was the most personal. Because it was
yeah.
it attacked Ramon, and it was a story that he had heard of when he was young. And he said he's going to say Mitai Doughty. Like, he knew before anything that this is what was coming for him, and it was calling him a coward after we find out that he
yeah.
was a draft dodger. And it was trying to get to him in order to, you know, to make him suffer for running away from his nature's national duty.
Uh-huh.
But all the other ones didn't seem as personal. Even the fact that we knew Chuck had these dreams, it didn't feel too personal.
Well, let's think about it, though. I'm probably would have to really, really think about the dream and the big toe, but...
Well, because the big toe is one that he had heard as a kid.
He had. Well, and the red spot, she was very vain.
Yeah.
So that would be a good story for her, something that ruined her beauty.
So maybe Stella's was the one with the least amount of connection. Well, I guess, but then if I think about it, she was ostracized after her mother left, so she knows uh-huh. what it's like to be like bullied and tortured for something you have no control over, which is exactly what Sarah did. She had no control over the way she looked or what she heard
mm-hmm.
and what her family did. But she was the one who was tortured for it.
I have no idea what the pale lady and Chuck.
He just had his dream. That
he
was
just
it.
Had this dream.
He just, and it was, that was the one that I felt was weird, because all of a sudden he's like, hey guys, so I have this dream, and I'm really worried that she's going to use this against me. You're like, that's a weird way to introduce it. He just says it.
Yeah.
It was right before they went into the hospital. I think it was either right before they went into the hospital or right as they were getting ready to. They're waiting for the elevator or something, and he just spouted it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little odd.
I'm kind of having to stretch, but as far as the story and that story in the movie, both of the characters felt like their dream was some kind of premonition. So they did something different to avoid the premonition.
Put them right into
them right into it. She went to a different vacation spot or a different bed and breakfast or mm-hmm. whatever, and he goes, he's like, I'm not going to this room that says RED room.
Yeah.
I'm going somewhere else, and he ends up right in it. But it's not as personal as Ramon's.
Yeah, Ramon's just felt like it was trying to kick him while he was down. You know, everything, just poking the sore spot.
Even the fall, he said his brother was brought back in pieces,
mm-hmm.
and this creature falls to pieces, yeah. You know?
Yeah, that one was pretty dark. I was thoroughly disgusted when Augie pulls the toe out of his
mouth. Oh my goodness gracious.
Like,
he should have just said when it said, "Where's my toe?"
Yeah.
It's in the kitchen floor.
It's right there.
Because in the story, they eat it. They slice it up into three pieces and it's gone. There's nothing you can do. But Augie pulled it out. He could have just been like, "It's right next to your eyeball."
Yeah. Floor. And it was one of those, like, that was, I thought, was a really cool portrayal, because I thought that, like you said, the story is a little different, and I always, too, I cringe whenever you have people, like, put their nails and they're, like, trying to, they're scratching at floorboards, because I just think of the pain of the fingernails, like, ripping off. But the creepy thing with this is that it was pulling him, and it pulled him into darkness. When they pull the bed away, it goes all the way to the wall, and it's gone. That was pretty bizarre.
Well, and something I liked about that was, you know, in the books, there's a section that all of the stories just end in a jump scare. They have no conclusion.
Yeah.
They're just meant to be told around the campfire and it's you know, and jump scare. And that one, that's one of them. The big toe one is one of those jump scare stories. So we have Augie, who everything's quiet. There's no music or anything. Mm-hmm. He's just looking up over the bed. And then when he comes back under the bed, there it is. Yeah. Jump. And I was like, yes, that's perfect.
That
because
was cool.
It's a jump scare. But so is Mitai Doughty Walker. That's a jump scare one. And we don't get that with that one.
That one was...
Very loosely based, I thought.
Yeah. And that one, too, I think was a little... I felt like it was too drawn out. It was like the last 20-25 minutes of the movie felt like the Jangly Man was there searching.
He got a lot of airtime.
He really did. And I felt that there were a couple times when I'm like, Ramon's not getting out of this one. Like, there's just there's no way.
No.
But I thought it was pretty ingenious of him to drive the car right into, you know, with the Jangly Man at the front, right into the truck. But I mean, outside of that, I felt like that would have been the end, and then maybe like one more moment where he actually isn't gone. But no, they follow the Jangly Man all the way back. He stalks him around the house. Not that I didn't think it was a great monster, phenomenally done, but it just felt like he got a lot more time.
A lot more.
Yeah.
Another thing that I noticed, I just want to hear your take on it.
Yeah.
Is when they're in the haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
And Stella all of a sudden is in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But Ramon is still, he's experiencing what actually is right now in this time, mm-hmm. in 1968. But they can still hear each other. And he finds her glasses from, like, she was actually there.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure how that all goes together, because...
Right.
We remember Chuck earlier, he got pulled into the past with the grandmother and the Doberman. And so he has this moment where he is terrified because he thinks he is in a place that he's not supposed to be. And then she does, but it's all of a sudden she just like turns and the book's gone. It's like she's just sucked into a different dimension.
Yeah.
And there's really no explanation. There's no... I do like the fact that she actually becomes Sarah. I thought that was kind of a cool twist. And we see the little bit as she looks into the mirror, as she turns to leave, we see like half of her hair. Did you catch that?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was kind of cool where you're like, okay, like, yes, she's Sarah, especially when she like looks into it. She's like, oh my God.
She clearly sees something that's not her
image. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't really know how we got to... It felt like it was just... That was their story. They were going to build them around this split dimension of past and present. And how they could hear each other, I don't know. Because it was like, if they wouldn't have been able to hear each other, I would have been more okay with it. The fact that he found her glasses means like she jumped into a time loop or something.
But they could communicate.
Yeah. So it was, they were in two different times at the same place at two different times, but they still were there to communicate. I don't know.
This is where it started to get a little confusing for me. And I was just thinking, I just want to see these stories.
Yeah.
I don't... The other thing about that is, if Sarah wanted Stella to see what she went through from a bird's eye view so much, but then was so prepared to kill her,
yeah.
Why? Why bother to show her that stuff if you're just going to kill her?
Well, and the thing is the writers and the movie knew it didn't make sense. Because you look at the end with how she's talking to Sarah, how Stella's like, you know, you were a victim,
mm-hmm.
but you became a monster.
Right.
And I like that line, but that line was only necessary because... It wasn't like she just wanted her story to be told, and once it was figured out, then, like, her soul could rest.
Right.
I mean, that would make more sense to me.
Yeah.
But Sarah was just this malicious bitch.
She was getting, she said, I've saved the best story for you. She was fully prepared.
Yeah.
To take her out.
Yeah. And it was, and again, too, when Ramon says, tell her the truth, I don't feel like that was very, like, it wasn't very revealing. We knew, we could see that she was a victim. I mean, mm-hmm. we hear her brother torturing her via the wax, the wax cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know she was tortured. We know that she was a victim, but we also know that she is the reason why all these different things happen. I was fully expecting her to be someone who was trying to protect the children from this dark spirit. And so when she says, I tried to save them, I tried, you know, it ended up being poison from, you know, a factory. But when I'm hearing that, I'm thinking, oh, so maybe Sarah's not the bad guy. She's trying to save people, but she can't because something more darker and more powerful is there. And it is the one that is doing all these stories.
That would have been better.
That makes more sense to me. Mm-hmm. But that's not the route they went.
Right. Because in the haunted house, in that story... And that's the one that Stella's kind of in at the end. That story is the haunted house. That spirit wants somebody to know what happened and gives them the keys.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what you got to do. Put my finger in the plate. And then it sticks to the guy who actually could. And then you come back here and I'll give you money for the church. You know, that ghost wants things to be put right, wants people to know what her story was. But then Sarah Bellows is just like, no, I'm just killing everybody.
Yeah, and
people who have nothing to do with anything, I'm going to kill them.
I was kind of lost with it. And especially you combine that with the ambiguous, like, sequel-dependent ending.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have a whole lot of strength in how it ends. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a very strong base where it could have, actually,
mm-hmm.
gone. I wanted your, because you had said you had some thoughts on this, and I really don't know why, but you had mentioned that the Nixon connection, or the reason why we have Nixon, you had some theories on. Why do you think that we went down that route with having the 60s and Nixon and the very heavily, like, it was Lulu's daughter, or I think it was, when they go in and they're like, oh, Tricky Dick. And they had, like, swastikas mm-hmm. on him and, like, just really heavy anti-Nixon. Yeah. So why do you think that was portrayed?
Well, I was thinking a couple of different things. I was thinking about the different themes that were cropping up and, like, facing your fears and what horror really is.
Mm-hmm.
Is it saying that the real horrors are these things that we're seeing actually happen?
Okay.
Like, it historically happened, like Nixon getting elected and people getting drafted into Vietnam and dying in Vietnam. And then I couldn't help, I was thinking about, is this pointing at some similarities with things that are going on now? Because, you know, you have Ramon and they're calling him a wetback, and it makes me think of all the things that are going on at the border right now.
Well, I don't know my history as well as I think I do, but... Were there really that many issues with, like, was there a Mexican hatred in the 60s? Like, I think it would have been more African-American in the 60s versus, I don't know, maybe it
bled into that. I mean, they're still brown.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But brown people. It just kind of seemed like it was a bit of a stretch. It almost seemed like, okay, guys, you're being too obvious with your political, your social commentary.
Right.
But yeah, I could see that. I like the duality of real horror versus perceived horror. I like that look at it, because I didn't pick that up that way. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. We gave our best. I said I thought Harold was just very well done, and then Tommy's ending was pretty gruesome. But yeah, I think that's just about it. Okay, so let's do our final review, and then since it's your first time, I'll let you pick. We do a ranking of 1 to 5 something relating to the movie. It could be anything. So we could do 1 to 5 big toes or anything like that. It doesn't have to be stars.
Oh, I like 1 to 5 big toes.
Do you? All right.
I sure do. All
right. So what are your final thoughts, your overall review of the film, and then your ranking, your rating of 1 to 5 big toes?
Okay. I'm going to give it 3 big toes because I'm really happy that there is a movie of this. I was very excited. I was not disappointed by the monsters. I thought that I went in saying the monsters better do justice to these illustrations, and I'm coming away saying that they did.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things, though. I'm right in the middle. I can't give it beyond a 3 because too much of the storyline was puzzling and distracting. So 3 big toes for me.
All right. Well, I'm giving it 2.5, simply because visually it was great. It had enough jump scare. It had enough build scare that I think as a horror movie standalone, it was decent. But there just are way too many unnecessary plot points. Time given to characters and storylines that were never resolved that could have been incorporating other elements of the primary text. I feel like it could be better if we get a sequel. And if the sequel incorporates many more of the stories, and maybe they're doing a 1, 2, 3. Maybe the plan is to kind of give a trilogy homage like the books or something. But
that'd be good.
If we don't, or if they are just going to do a 2-parter, or if they're, even if it doesn't happen, I think that we've lost what could have been even more. When as soon as people find out that we were getting this movie, I, as well as you and Lenny, many other of the fans, were just so pumped. We could not wait. And while it delivered in that text, in that context of the movie's, the monster portrayal being just perfect to the illustrations, I think that some of the other areas really fell flat. So while it was a good movie, it could have been better. So I'm going to give it 2.5 big toes. So, well, next week we are looking at, I'm not sure, I'm looking at the calendar right now and it says Good Boys or Ready or Not. I don't think I want to see Ready or Not. Probably go see Good Boys. But as we have seen, comedies are tough to review because you're like, yeah, it was funny. All right, now what do we talk about? So we'll look at something. We will post, and maybe we'll do a drunk drive-in. We'll see. We've got one on the books for the middle of September, so maybe we'll bump it up. But then in 2 weeks, September 6th, It Chapter 2 comes out. So Ben will be on in that week following that, so we're looking forward to that. But Devin, thanks for coming.
This was really fun. Thank you.
This was cool. We'll have to get you on for another one here soon, and keep an eye out. If there's something that you're looking forward to see, let me know. Put it on the books.
I will.
So, as always, guys, if you want to reach out to the podcast or me in any way, you can get a hold of us on Facebook. If you go to Facebook and you do search The Drive-In hosted by Aaron Lopez, or if you want to go on to Twitter, you can go on there and search me by Get The Eck Out, EECHAUTE, and you can get more information about some of the things coming up on the podcast. As always, give a quick little shout out to Dre and Kim down in Texas. Hopefully you guys are enjoying yourselves. Dre had strep a couple weeks ago, so hopefully he's recovered from that. And, you know, they're always just fighting Jordan with whoever can get as many steps in. So they're all in our Fitbits and walking around and taking care of business. So, but yeah, I think we'll go ahead and wrap it up then. Until next time, drive home safe. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks.